Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The $2 trillion spending package signed into law by President Trump at the end of December earmarks some $284 billion for businesses. That will come as relief for many, but for thousands of small firms, it's too late. From our daily economics podcast, The Indicator from Planet Money, Stacey Vanek Smith and Brittany Cronin spoke to a business owner forced to file for bankruptcy because no one helped her with one of her biggest costs, her rent.
Daniela Stromberg. She's the owner of Demai Urban Spa in Brooklyn, New York. When she opened back in 2004, Daniela wanted to create a little oasis where you could come in, kick back, and, you know, treat yourself.
Yeah, spa.
And over the years, she developed a little community. Most of her customers were regulars, and many of her workers had been with her for more than a decade.
Back in June, her spa was temporarily closed under New York shutdown orders. And Daniela suspected it would be months before she could open again.
I kept waiting for our government to make a plan.
After closing her spa in March, Daniela Stromberg went looking for help anywhere she could find it. She applied for one of the PPP loans from the government, and she was approved.
But those loans helped businesses cover payroll. And Daniela didn't just have payroll to worry about. She also had to pay rent, around $28,000 a month.
I'm a day spa. I'm utterly vulnerable. So how would I then pay the full rent?
Daniela turned to the one person who could really help her solve her rent problem, her landlord.
I needed an exit strategy.
Then, in July, Daniela caught a break. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that New York City would enter phase 3 of reopening, which meant that spas could reopen.
Daniela and her staff started coming early, staying late.
But the numbers just weren't adding up. Daniela could only open 2 of her 7 treatment rooms because of social distancing. So even after reopening, Daniela's revenues were down 70% from the previous year.
And then in September, Daniela received a final offer from her landlord. It was 2 months of half-off rent, and if she wanted an additional month at 50% off, she would have to sign 5 more years onto her lease.
What did he think was happening in 2 months? Like, that's just magic thinking.
Daniela was at the end of her rope. She told her landlord she would be out by the end of the month.
Daniela's spa is one of more than 100,000 small businesses estimated to have closed this year.
When a business closes, it's still on the hook for the money it owes. Some business owners, like Daniela, file for bankruptcy as a way to deal with their outstanding debts.
Kate Waldock is an economist who specializes in corporate bankruptcy. She says when a business closes, it sets off a chain of reactions that ripples through the economy. First, the business owner stops paying their landlord.
Then the landlord isn't making any money, and chances are they probably can't lease that space to a new tenant, and so it's probably sitting empty. And so all of a sudden, the landlord can't make mortgage payments to the bank.
When the virus is finally under control and businesses can start reopening again, Kate says it will take a lot of cash to jumpstart the economy.
But for Daniela Stromberg, it's just too late.
Stacey Vanek Smith.
Brittany Cronin, NPR News.
There are millions of California workers, perhaps you, out of a job because of this pandemic. First stop for many people who lose their job is to apply for unemployment money from the state of California. But right now, for a lot of folks, the money just isn't coming.
It was such a mess. I applied for unemployment in the beginning of April. My claim wasn't going through and no one could tell me why.
When you're sitting there every single day, 5 days a week, on hold for hours on end, it definitely got stressful.
It makes me want to give up.
That's Nick Forster, Jack Heiser, and Vin Olifer sharing their experiences dealing with California's Employment Development Department, or as it's better known, the EDD. So many people in LA right now are dealing with this. Last month, in December, the state reported some 683,000 workers were waiting for their jobless benefits. All of this as the state deals with an unemployment fraud case in the billions of dollars. So the question is, why aren't people who need unemployment checks getting those checks? And what's being done about it? For answers, we turn to KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb, who covers the business of Southern California. Happy New Year, Benjamin.
And to you, Steve. Happy New Year.
This is an agency in pretty deep dysfunction. I mean, we have seen inmates in prison receive unemployment benefits, a fraud case north of $2 billion. We've seen legitimate payments that have been frozen. The head of the agency actually retired last week. What has that meant for those who pay into the system and who need their money right now?
Well, first of all, Steve, there are a lot of people getting unemployment checks right now in California. EDD says it's more than 4 million people, so a good sizable chunk of the state's population. But there are hundreds of thousands more who are still waiting for their money, and that includes Vin Olafer.
I'm a full-time student right now at Cal State Long Beach. Before the pandemic, I was working at Berlin Bistro, a little like restaurant in downtown Long Beach.
Olafer, who uses they and them pronouns, says they didn't apply for unemployment initially. It's because they didn't think they qualified. But after some convincing from family and friends, they gave it a go back in August. That's when Olafer encountered a convoluted system, Steve. They spent hours on the phone trying to get a hold of an EDD worker to no avail. And eventually, Olafer did connect and found out their application needed to be verified before it could be processed.
So I got on and was able to like certify the you know, 14 weeks I'd had. A week after that, I got this big stack of mail. There were like 14 letters here that all came at once that were all of that information, all of the certification, no postmarks. And so I certified everything and nothing ever happened.
So even after certifying their identity, Olafer has not been paid yet. Now, part of the reason, at least, is tied to the fraud case that you just outlined and that we've reported on here for weeks at KCRW. It's also brought the process to a snail's pace, this fraud case, leaving folks with legitimate claims, like Olafer, waiting to be paid. Olafer is luckier than many workers who are out of a job. They have support from parents and can live at home. But of course, not everyone has that luxury. And we're seeing that play out all across Southern California.
Olafer, Benjamin, is one of those California workers still waiting for the benefits. Do we know how long they'll have to wait?
Well, it's a moving goalpost. I mean, EDD says it's hoping to get through the backlog by the end of this month, by the end of January. Sometimes people have very frustrating experiences, though, just kind of dealing with this. But their money does eventually come through, eventually. That's true for Nick Forrester, who still isn't working, hasn't worked since March, lost a job at a dim sum spot in Beverly Hills. Now, Forrester tells me they waited 6 months to receive benefits, but a big problem was getting a hold of someone over the phone.
It was such a mess. I couldn't get anyone on the phone till like probably July, and my claim wasn't going through and no one could tell me why. So being able to speak to someone when you have a question or an issue would be immensely helpful. You really can't talk to anyone. It's like, it's such a hard process just to speak to anyone on the phone. So it almost seems like no one's really willing to help you, but I imagine it's just they have too much work to do and not enough people.
And EDD has confirmed that to me in an interview. The department says that they've had a hard time hiring people and really getting up to speed to deal with this huge influx in unemployment cases. Now, in the meantime, while Forrester waited, buying food was a big source of anxiety. Forrester told me that they watched what they ate and also relied on their school, Santa Monica College, to send meals. Now, another person, Jack Heiser, who I spoke to, is back at work, but he was out of a job from March all the way to September and had a very similar frustrating experience navigating EDD.
I went to, you know, apply for benefits and they just didn't let me in. And basically I tried to get through these people and sat on hold for upwards of, I think for 3 or 4 days in a row, I'd sit on hold for about 3.5 to 4 hours. And most of those days I would actually get hung up on.
Heiser tells me that every purchase made him feel like he was slipping into a financial hole. And this is really the discourse you hear from folks that have lost their job and are trying to kind of make it through the pandemic. Also, Heiser says using any device that had electricity made him worry about his power bill. Buying a $9 bag of ground coffee, for example, felt like a luxury. Now, back to that staffing problem, Steve. The department only has 27 fraud investigators. So you can imagine if your claim finds its way to the fraud department, it's going to take a long time to get processed. So just another example of this staffing issue at the department.
All right, staffing issue, but is that all that's going on here? Is that why it's taking so long?
If only staffing was the only problem, right? So Chaz Alamo with the Legislative Analyst Office here in California, it's a nonprofit fiscal and policy advisor. He's part of this state strike team that reviewed the performance of EDD a few months ago. And that team found all sorts of problems. For one, the computer system that EDD uses is really out of date. I mean, it is ancient. And it requires a 60-year-old computer language, and staffers don't even know how to make programming changes in that program.
Without question, EDD's reliance on outdated technology has hindered their ability to make quick program changes, and it's led the department to rely on workarounds and a time-intensive manual process.
So, Steve, you might be wondering, in addition to the computer problems, why don't you just hire more people? Well, it's not that easy. Alamo and the strike force also found problems with these new hires. So EDD says it brought on 5,000 workers to help with this huge influx, but many didn't have the right training or experience. I got to tell you, that's really hard to get right now when most workers are working remotely. Now, EDD has acknowledged the problems in this strike force report and says it will reform. I should also mention the head of EDD retired at the end of last year. It was a retirement that certainly was hastened by all of these problems. Governor Gavin Newsom has appointed a replacement that will take over after a state Senate confirmation, which is expected in the coming days and weeks.
So, Benjamin, if the state clears this backlog, right, and people get their unemployment benefits, what's next? I mean, does this help people get by until they, fingers crossed, get that next job?
Well, there's a good amount of research out there about this, right? And one scholar that's looked into this locally is Jenny Brand. She teaches sociology at UCLA and also studies the effects of unemployment on workers.
In a situation like this, when you have such widespread job loss and unemployment, what we typically see is long spells of unemployment. It's very difficult to find a new job at a comparable wage. And so you have declines in social involvement, declines in psychological well-being that's associated with all these other economic consequences that workers are experiencing.
So in other words, losing employment like this puts a worker at a disadvantage down the road. There are long-term impacts. And it's just really painful for some people right now in the present. That's what Vin Olafer told me.
It's one of the many ways I think people are being left behind right now. And the personal effects of that and how really horrible it feels to be like allowed to slip through the cracks in so many different levels.
They're talking about slipping through the cracks, of course. There is federal relief, right, in the form of those $600 stimulus checks, in addition to the added pandemic unemployment benefits as well. That means hope is at least on the way, right?
That's true. And there are also some positive numbers that we're seeing reported from the state as well. State unemployment rates right now, it continues to fall. At last check, it was at 8.2, which is high, but a few points lower than what we've been seeing in the last few months. And look, the vaccine has renewed hope that there is an end to all this. But I've been speaking to a lot of economists, some experts about the state of California's economy, and they say a recovery is going to take some time. You have people behind on payments for their cars, their homes, you name it. And meanwhile, as we've been discussing, hundreds of thousands of workers need help right now from the state, legitimately, but they just can't get it.
Well, those stimulus checks did start to go out in the last week. They'll continue to go out as well through mid-January, although that obviously won't be enough for many struggling families for very long. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb, who covers the business of Southern California for us. Benjamin, Happy New Year. Thanks to you.
Anytime.
Another semester is starting out with more than half of the public school students in the nation learning in front of tablets and laptops. And concerns are growing about the students left behind academically and socially by continued school closures. That's why school staff have been designated among the earliest in line to get the new coronavirus vaccines. NPR's Anya Kamenetz has been talking with educators around the country as they anxiously await their shots.
We asked teachers on Twitter how they felt about the vaccine, and almost 2,000 responded, like Cheryl Coker, who teaches music in Houston, Texas.
And as an elementary teacher, my brain went to the beloved Dr. Seuss.
That vaccine?
I would take it in a box. I would take it with a fox. I would take it in a house. I would take it with a mouse. Vaccinate me here or there. Vaccinate me anywhere.
Federal guidelines say all school personnel, as well as child care providers, should be put in the box of frontline essential workers. That's Category 1B, just after the elderly in long-term care facilities and healthcare workers. In some states, school workers have already begun to get their shots. Surveys show a minority of teachers expressing some vaccine hesitation, but most feel like Cheryl Coker and like Don Brown, who drives a school bus in the Chicago suburbs.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get the vaccine as soon as I can.
That's because of a funny thing he says happens as soon as students board his bus.
It's a strange thing that happens when kids get on the bus. They wait till they get to that top step, and they always cough. This was even before the pandemic.
In states like Utah and Texas, educators have been in tense discussions with state leaders over vaccine priority. In Utah, Heidi Matthews is president of the state's largest teacher union, which fought to get teachers moved up the list.
I mean, we can't keep our desks 6 inches apart, much less doing any sort of social distancing.
Most schools in Utah are at least partly open and with big average class sizes.
Many of our teachers feel like they have been forced into, you know, that proverbial lion's den. They don't feel safe.
Are classrooms so dangerous when it comes to coronavirus? Well, that's the subject of two new studies. Both found schools can operate safely with precautions as long as community spread is not too high. But in most places in the United States, COVID is surging out of control, and that means mixed feelings at this moment for educators, especially where school buildings are open.
And I think it's still going to be horrible between now and spring break. But now I see a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a freight train.
When I reached Dr. Michael Hinojosa, the superintendent of Dallas Public Schools, he had just found out his staff could be getting shots as soon as next week.
I feel great. I feel that we've finally been listened to during this whole pandemic. We've been the lost voice out there.
Educators who have yet to go back to work in person have different ideas about the vaccine. Clarice Brazos teaches humanities online in a Philadelphia public high school. Brazos says she'll be happy to get the vaccine, but she'll still be worried about her students spreading the virus, including on public transportation.
I work at a really small high school, but we've already had several students who have either lost parents or whose parents have been hospitalized. A lot of our students live with their grandparents.
No vaccine has yet been approved for children under 16, and younger people are at the back of the line, according to CDC guidelines. Public health experts say that vaccinating teachers will mitigate risk, but masks, hand washing, social distancing, and ventilation are here to stay, at least for the rest of this school year. Anya Kamenetz, NPR News.
For some frontline healthcare workers, waiting to get vaccinated is a nightmare. The rollout is happening, but it's a long, slow process. Some clinicians are being told to just wait. Gabriella Emanuel of member station GBH has the story of a nursing assistant in central Massachusetts.
Lately, Carlos Reyes has been having nightmares.
And it's terrible, and I wake up several times a night.
It's always the same plot. He comes home from his job at a nursing home, where he's often working with COVID patients. And in reality, he wears a mask at home and eats alone in his bedroom. But in the dream,
I come home, and I just want to see my family. Next thing I know, they're contaminated, they have COVID, and my family and my parents.
He says there's one thing that might quiet his nightmares, getting the vaccine. Healthcare workers are supposed to be at the front of the line for vaccines. But when Reyes asked his nursing homes if he could get the shot, the answer was no.
Essentially, what they've told me about the vaccine is that they prefer to give it to the more permanent staff.
Reyes works for a staffing agency. It's like a temp agency. He picks up shifts at 4 or 5 different facilities, working full-time but moving around. Between 5% and 10% of staff in nursing homes are people like Reyes. His staffing agency says more than half of their nurses and nursing assistants in Massachusetts were told they cannot get the shot. In a lot of states, private medical practices say they are in a similar situation. Often they are in line after hospital employees. Sometimes that means after hospital administrators and even after those working from home.
Very, very frustrating.
This is demoralizing.
It also feels a little like we've been dismissed.
That's Gary Merkin, Christina Lehane, and Emily Swilling. Here's what's happening. The federal government is sending vaccines to each state, and then each state devises their own plan to allocate the shots, sometimes delegating to individual hospitals and boards of health. That has meant a lot of variation and sometimes a lot of confusion. Here in Massachusetts, the Department of Public Health did not respond to multiple interview requests, but Paul Bittinger chairs the state's Vaccine Advisory Group. He says they are aware of the concerns and working hard to fix them, but he points out it's still just the first few weeks.
This is more complex, you know, by orders of magnitude than any normal vaccination campaign, whether it's the complexity of the product or the scale of the effort or the limited supply.
And depending on where you work, say a nursing home versus a private practice, exactly who oversees the rollout is different. Hospitals that are administering the vaccine say just figuring out which local healthcare providers are eligible and getting them scheduled is another big hurdle. Bittinger says none of this is easy for overstretched and sometimes under-resourced public health systems and hospitals.
There are still lots of other important priorities in addition to vaccination, such as planning for and accommodating the surge. You know, the state's rolling out field hospitals. There's so much that's needed.
Experts say that in the coming days and weeks, things should be sorted out for many of those in private practices. For contract or temp workers, it's a little less clear. The staffing agency where Carlos Reyes works says it's encountering problems in more than a dozen states where it operates, and there are only small moves in the right direction. Regardless, it's too late for Reyes. After a week of trying to figure out how to get a shot, he now has COVID.
It's very scary. It feels unnecessary because, again, the vaccines are there. Everything could have been avoided. Everything. Absolutely everything.
He says now he hopes his story will be a wake-up call for the nursing homes where he works, and maybe for others to treat temporary healthcare workers the same as permanent employees. For NPR News, I'm Gabriella Emanuel.
It's been roughly a month since the first doses of a COVID-19 vaccine arrived in Charlotte. Thousands of people have rolled up their sleeves to take their shots. But about half of frontline healthcare workers at two area hospitals haven't signed up. WFAE's Claire Donnelly reports.
Atrium Health received its first shipments of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine on December 14th. Since then, the hospital system has invited about 33,380 healthcare workers in Phase 1A to get the shot. But only about half have scheduled a vaccine appointment. Dr. Gary Little is Atrium's chief medical officer. He spoke to reporters earlier this week.
It's somewhere around 50% who have said, you know, we've invited to say, hey, you know, you're eligible to get vaccinated as part of phase 1A. And those who have either accepted and scheduled themselves or have actually been vaccinated.
As of Wednesday evening, 15,420 Atrium employees had scheduled vaccine appointments. Atrium spokesperson Chris Berger blames it in part on employees' busy schedules rather than vaccine refusal. He says in an email, quote, patient-facing teammates are working nonstop, so between them responding and finding a time to be scheduled while continuing to work on getting them lined up to be vaccinated, to have nearly half 3 weeks in is pretty impressive. But Berger says he's sure there are some employees who are hesitant about the vaccine and waiting to see how others do. He says Atrium will keep communicating with them about how effective the vaccine is. The vaccination rate is similar at Charlotte's other large hospital system, Novant Health. Novant spokesperson Megan Rivers says nearly half of its Phase 1A employees have scheduled a vaccine appointment or received their first vaccine dose. She says Novant has vaccinated about 5,400 employees in the Charlotte area. North Carolina's Health Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen responded to reports that some people are declining the COVID-19 vaccine at a press conference earlier this week. She says the vaccines are built upon years of work to develop vaccines for similar viruses and were rigorously tested for safety and effectiveness. Cohen says more than 100,000 people in North Carolina have gotten their first dose.
We've had no serious safety concerns from the vaccines. I think folks will start to see that this vaccine is, it continues, and they see their peers, it is safe and it is effective.
Both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines have been approved by the Food and Drug Administration for emergency use. They're each about 95% effective at preventing COVID-19 after two shots. For WFAE News, I'm Claire Donnelly.
This photo of cleaning wipes represents evidence that a New Jersey employer is complying with COVID-19 cleaning protocols, despite a complaint to the state labor department. This one is in response to a complaint that an employer failed to provide hand sanitizer. The state labor department has scores of pictures showing New Jersey employers proving they're complying with state COVID-19 protocols and not violating pandemic rules of protection and prevention. The DOL has received 2,000 complaints since the governor's executive order 192 took effect in early November. The order mandates all employers, business, nonprofit, educational, governmental, to protect from COVID everyone who comes in physical contact with their operation.
We're very proud here in New Jersey to be in the forefront of protecting workers across the state. And here in COVID, that means something different than usual. We're very proud that we're one of the first states to put in COVID standards to make sure we're protecting workers in this new environment.
The executive order provides a way to file a formal complaint online with this form found on the state labor department's website. Most complaints focus on lack of social distancing or face coverings or pre-screening of employees entering a building or proper sanitizing or sanitizer.
All of these complaints have led to full compliance. Of every business we've had to investigate or reach out to, they quickly came into compliance.
Of the 2,000 complaints filed, 1,100 were investigated and resolved. 510 are under investigation, 260 are pending an investigation, and 250 were non-COVID related and referred to other agencies.
Has the state in any of these instances had to force a business to go in forcefully and say, you must do this?
Not at this point, no, Michael. We've been very proud and lucky and unsurprised that New Jersey businesses have stepped to the plate.
That has one lawyer who agrees with the safety protocols and represents employers wondering about the necessity of the governor's executive order.
I think it's well-intentioned. Whether there was a necessity for the special whistleblower provisions at the state level is probably debatable.
For serious and egregious violations, the executive order calls for a $1,000 fine and 6 months in jail.
They are on the outlying edge of what would ever be necessary. Clearly, nothing like that I don't foresee happening in our time here. But in the end, if you have an employer who every day is putting their employees at risk and risking their life and health and safety, we want to have all tools available to us to bring them into compliance. Again, I don't foresee ever having to use them.
Michael Hill, NJ Spotlight News.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, January 8, 2021. So I have been told this is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Second time this calendar year. With all of the wackiness that has been going on, really not make sure we're using words correctly, with all of the terrorism that has been going on in the first 8 days of the so-called new year. Wow, it can be easy to forget that, you know, there were other problems and things that we were dealing with even before the Rona. There were other problems and things that we were dealing with on the job. What a week, what a year. We will try as best we can to use logic to try to help solve problems without creating new problems in the workplace. Certainly, with everything that took place this week, this is a time where you want to be codified, meaning you have some thought, some logic, you have a plan about what you say, you have a strategy, what you say, what you don't say in your work environment. This is not a week where you want to just come in and willy-nilly share your thoughts. Trump ought to be impeached right now. I can't believe what they're doing to my brother. Can you see they blocked his social media account? Like, none of the above. You know, you're not, if you're physically going into an office space, or even if you're in some sort of virtual space and, you know, you all have downtime, as they say, where you're not really talking about work related issues and some of the madness from this week comes up, I would not have a whole lot to say, if anything. You know, it's just been so crazy. I can't even get my mind around it. What did you think? Get back in the question lane, or even less than that, if they want to volunteer their opinion and tell you what they think about what's happening or who's to blame for what's happening or anything else. Mm-hmm. You listen. Some folks, you can ask a question and then we get back to work related issues. But absolutely. And especially if you're in one of those, I know we've talked to folks, some of you all, where they have like a television in the workplace, like, oh no, if they like have this like CNN or whatever, Fox News, whatever it is, they've got that playing in the work environment. Like, oh no, I would even feel some type of way about watching all of that, because I would think if I'm watching it, then someone's going to come up and they're going to ask, what do you think? Now I can't say, oh, I don't know, because I'm sitting here watching it. So, no, I would even feel some type of way about watching it at work. Like, we're not here to be watching television. You know, if it's a TV in the break room and all that, maybe that's the day that I skip the break room. But I would not discuss anything related to what happened this week on the job, even with other non-white people. Highlight, boldface, print, all caps, the last portion of that. Even with other non-white people, not a word, not a peep. You can use the example that I gave before. My mom, Mr. Fuller, spoke to him this week. And Johnny Cochran, the late. They're all hanging out in the break room with the TV on, no less. Brother Gus, come sit with us and talk about the insurrection in the nation's capital. Collection of troublemaking Negroes getting out of here. Bye, Ma. No way. No way. Asking for trouble. Like, and like I said before, even if you think all these people are cool, I know Johnny's not going to snitch on me. I hope. They got Alexa. And you got other white people who might come by and do some ear hustling. Like, it's nothing I've never heard. Ever. If that person exists, make sure you don't spectate. But I have never heard any black person who says, oh, yeah, I got a raise. Came up like 50% on my pay at work because I just came in and was telling them what I thought about the Trayvon Martin case. You know, that wasn't even, I work on a construction site, so we don't have anything to do with that. But I just came in Minnesota, no less. But I came in, I'm just telling what I thought about Trayvon Martin and got that raise. I've never heard that. Somebody came in and came in and told them what I thought about old President Trump and, you know, need to get him on out of here. Should have banned him on Twitter a long time ago. Got all this insurrection in the Capitol and they gave me an extra 2 weeks vacation. I've never heard that. I have heard folks who got in trouble. Somebody went and snitched on them. Sometimes another non-white person, victim of racism. Even sometimes someone classified as black went and snitched on them. And oh my God, can you believe what they were saying? And unless you are paid to provide political commentary, stick to talking about things related to the job, particularly this week. Maybe for the rest. Yeah, particularly for this month. I'll say it that way because I'm sure it's going to be mayhem all the way through the inauguration and all the rest. So, yeah, you have nothing to say about this. As it relates to, and folks can let us know if this came up on the job, people tried to force you to talk about this, if you had to use some compensatory conversation control or whatever it is to try to navigate this in the workplace, let us know if you have any tips for all of that. with the audio segments that we heard at the beginning, wow, there were a prolific number of metaphors. I generally point that out during the compensatory call-in, but they piled up so many of them during the segment at the end of the rope and the lost voice and the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a freight train. I mean, we got compound metaphors within this. I was staggered by the time we got to the end of it. And I have said at least one pattern I've noted when people get a little more emotional about things, sometimes there will be more metaphors. We're a little more excited, might not be as precise with our word choice, so we'll rely a bit on metaphors, which I would say is, I would exercise great caution anytime we're dealing with workplace issues. You want to be extremely precise, meticulous with word choice. Not the best environment for metaphors. Anyway, they started out, they were talking about some of the smaller businesses and how they're being impacted by the Rona and the continued shutdowns, not getting help, not getting economic assistance, and not getting it quick enough and or not getting enough of it. And then just not getting help with basic things, things like rent. I tried to double check. That was an NPR report, so it was just audio. They didn't have any photographs with that segment, so I couldn't see if the spa owner was a non-white person or a white person. I really couldn't venture a guess based on the audio, but I am sure you will have a disproportionate number of non-white people who are impacted, non-white entrepreneurs, workers who are impacted, not getting the assistance that they need and having to go out of business and or losing a job because their place of employment goes out of business. White people have way more resources, way better connected. We talked about that all year long, where it's easier for them to go to the bank and get help. And or even I think we had talked about in the context of school, young black scholar, saying that, man, the place where he's renting from, some of the people that he's renting with, the property owner might be their relative, that type of thing, where white people might have generally have much better relationships even with the property owner, where they might be able to get that type of deal where, oh, I can do half of my rent until, you know, things kind of square away, da, 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 where a black person is not going to get that, you know, type of remedy, even temporary assistance to try to see if they can get through. So, again, just the point of emphasis that I try to make on a regular basis about being an entrepreneur, not going to solve the problem. That security net, we've talked about that so much. White people having that, having other white people who have resources who can bail you out, place to stay, help you out with rent or anything, all kinds of things. If you lose a job, oh, okay, no problem. Boom. I know such and such. We can get you hired on here to get you another job. Just being classified as white. You don't even have to be intelligent. Remember, they got all those admission scams and everything. Totally fraudulent, but just being classified as white. Things are going to be all right. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a freight train. The next segment, they talked about the difficulties in getting unemployment, and that's something that they've talked about a lot. Even with the racial component there, one of the ways, and just in terms of access for so many of the centers, like you heard in the segment, they were saying, like, you can't even talk to anybody to try to, you know, see how is your claim? Is it being processed? Where am I, you know, in this whole, in the whole chain in terms of, am I going to be accepted? Did they get all my paperwork? They heard that with businesses who were trying to get assistance as well. They were saying, if you have a home office, you have a Wi-Fi setup, this might be a lot easier for you as opposed to if you don't have Wi-Fi at home, you have to try and see if you can go out, go to a McDonald's, go to a library. They talked about that repeatedly throughout the year and how that also has a huge impact. And they were talking about people just being stressed because of the difficulty in just trying to get the whole claim process started, being able to talk to someone, being able to access. You can't get the paperwork in a timely manner, saying that you filled out the wrong paperwork. It was tons of that where they were telling folks that you filled out form 5F2. And it's supposed to be 5F1. So we got to throw your application in the trash and you got to start over again. So that means it's going to take an additional 2 months. lots of that throughout the whole, I was going to say the whole year, throughout the past, you know, 12 months or so. The next segment, they talked about educators and whether they want to get the vaccine, how that's going to help the whole process of getting students back in school. And that's been a big point of contention since the very beginning of this. Parents, if they're going to work and needing children to be in school and safe and all the rest of it, they said that, which I, the word choice, they said, now it is the minority of teachers who don't want the vaccine. Most of the educators and staff and folks, and they even talked to some of the transportation staff, said, oh yeah, we want the vaccine. I thought it was interesting. It even had the bus driver. He said that, oh yeah, I want the vaccine. He said, I've noted, and it was like this even before the Rona, that the students, they get on the bus and the first thing that they do is cough. And I said, oh yeah, I want the vaccine. And I was thinking, and again, I didn't have a visual with that. It would not surprise me if a disproportionate number of like the transportation providers and that sort of thing are non-white people. That would not surprise me at all to be subject to that, especially if you've got lots of white children, which we have heard from educators. If you've got a lot of white children whose parents are Trump supporters and they think the Rona is fake, this is all a bunch of hooey, a big conspiracy, I'm not wearing a mask, I'm not social distancing, and so their children think the same thing. Man, getting on the bus, coughing with their MAGA shirt on and MAGA lunchbox. The minority of teachers do not want the vaccine. I guess they got a lot of folks who are willing to get vaccinated now, which I'm not opposed. I'm just pointing that out. I'm not opposing or against or what have you, just making an observation. And that was within that report, talking to the educators, where they were saying it seemed like a light at the end of the tunnel. I don't know. They were saying that some of the reports were saying having children back in school is safe as long as the Rona is not surging at large. But it seems to be by many of the reports. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not a parent. If I had children, I'm not sure I would be too enthused about having my child back in school right now, any age group. Next, confusion. They were talking about with regards to getting the vaccine out to essential workers, and that word discretion. Now, they didn't use the word discretion, but that's what it was. They were saying because we don't have like a national protocol in terms of dissemination. It's kind of a hodgepodge, and, you know, each area is doing their own thing. And, you know, we'll give it out to these folks or give it out to these folks. And they've said it's been slow. It's been a backlog. It has not been efficient at all. I've heard that from some other so-called countries as well. But they said the key word, they didn't say discretion, although they could have, but they said confusion. Lots of that all year long, just cannot seem to squash confusion so that you get clarity and better understanding so that people can make great choices to safeguard their health. No. We just had confusion every step of the way. Even in there, people who were saying that they wanted to get the vaccine, but all this confusion about the dissemination of the vaccine and boop, didn't get it. And I think you even heard some folks there who said they ended up testing positive and they wanted to get the vaccine. And within that, the racism, white supremacy, again, they were talking about the discretion and protocols for vaccine distribution. They were saying that temporary workers weren't being treated the same as permanent workers. That is for sure another one. Non-white people, we talked about that explicitly many times over the years. Non-white people being overrepresented with so-called temporary employees where you don't have all the benefits and all the rest. And I guess in this type of context, that might mean one of the benefits that you miss out on is the vaccine, if you even want such a thing, but might not even be a choice for you if you are a temporary employee, even a temporary essential employee. The last segment that we heard, they were talking about New Jersey specifically, and they were using the word complaint I prefer report. I'm not whining. We're talking about serious health issues, pandemic, global health pandemic, in fact. But they were saying they had, I guess, a hotline and all these different resources set up to make sure that businesses are complying with the protocols. And it gave me pause because they had all these different companies that were posting pictures of like sanitizing wipes, gloves, bleach, that type of thing, which is, you know, great, all well and good. But I mean, you could take a photograph of sanitizing material and then never use it, right? Just because you have the cleaning, like they weren't showing even pictures or video of like custodial staff going around and cleaning and wiping and that. They didn't, it was just, you know, box of cleaning material. Here's our cleaning material. Like that's a, that to me would not be, oh, okay, I'm satisfied. They're doing, I'm sure they break that out and use it 8 hours a day or whatever the case. Anyway, within all that, they were saying that they had set up resources and that they, I think, had received like 2,000 complaints. This was reports. This was just for the state of New Jersey about businesses not following the protocols, much of it Rona related. We've talked about that. I would look wherever you are, if you're in New Jersey or wherever you are, what sort of resources do they have? Do they have something similar? Is it set up so that you can make an anonymous report, minimize retaliation if your job is not following the protocol, if you're not allowed to be at home, virtual, all the rest of it, if you got to go into a physical location? Are they making sure we got gloves, people are distancing, we're not crowding into the break room to get donuts and all this other foolishness? We're doing as much as we reasonably can to be safe. If that's not happening, look for the resources. There should be a website, phone number, something set up so that you can make report and maybe make multiple reports. They said with that clip in New Jersey that it's been, I guess, effective to some degree in getting people to comply once they've been reported. So whatever help that you need or is out there available to try and safeguard your health. I've said it repeatedly. If you don't take your health seriously, no one else will. System of white supremacy. It is every day, all day activity, abusing, terrorizing black people and having disregard for their health. That's, you know, par for the course. Number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Not for spectators, certainly not this week. Not for spectators. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. You can read your commentary if you would like to remain anonymous. We can share your thoughts, observations, what have you, and you won't have to worry about your coworkers finding out. We can share, especially if you have tips, right, on dealing with all the chaos and everything that happened this week and getting through that without, you know, having to talk to your coworkers and, you know, give your whole views and observations on what transpired. Share that as well. Again, keep things focused on your job. You are not there to provide off the cuff political commentary. Let's see. I was going to get our first caller, but I just, she reminded me. Our scholar, folks remember, our young scholar who he emailed, I read his report some time back about he's going to school, white roommates. We were talking about the whole situation, like maintaining safety. I think he's starting all that out. So said, I'm going to check in and see if we can get reports, maybe two or three throughout the course of the year, just as an experiment to see how things are going. Make sure that he is safe. Observations on his roommates, if they do anything racist. And then within the context of everything that's going down this year with regards to, you know, rioting and insurrection in the nation's capital, the Rona, and all the rest of it. So we will check in after we get, you know, some time to get acclimated and all. But hopefully things are starting off well. Seems everyone is taking the Rona seriously and battening down. So hopefully he will be able to do great work, stay safe, and we'll be able to check in and get updates on him as the year proceeds. That's it. Let's see. Our Bay Area mom, if you have commentary, you should be with us, ma'am.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Greetings to you and the callers on the line. I can relate to the school, the ones with the children, because it is hard social distancing with children. I don't understand how this is going to work with the children. The teachers, this is going to be so hard. So, and even with the clip of the guy who works, who has to eat by himself, and he works in some kind of health facility, and he has to eat by himself at home because he could be contaminated. I think that's too bad, especially to have a job like that and then how your whole world changes. I think it's strange that if he has to take the vaccine to work and it's only offered to regular employees first, maybe they shouldn't have the temporary employees working with patients like that. I think they should switch it around, because it's not balanced to have everyone's working with people that could expose you to the virus, but you can't stay safe. At my job, we had a meeting, yesterday it was via Teams, Zooms, whatever their little portals are, and they were talking about the same thing and how you have to have two shots in order for it to be effective, and then you still have to wear a mask, but you're a little safer. So it's real tricky. And as far as talking about, I'm just in and out of homes, and then people, my actual coworkers, I guess I don't communicate with anyone ever. And now that we social distance, since we shelter in place or social distance, and everything is on computer, so I just keep it business, so it never comes up. I was in a home when all that stuff happened, and I just looked at the news, looked at it, and said, oh, dear, what's going on? So they kind of explained what was going on, and then I said, oh, this is terrible. And I'm in a black home, and everyone's, it was a strange visual, kind of looked like Vietnam or something like that. It was strange, but I just walked away and went in another room until my client was ready to come and do our session. So I kind of just avoided it. And then when I came back the next day, which was Thursday, she just said she just wouldn't turn the TV on. So I said, thanks, because I didn't want to hear it. And that's how I dealt with that. So, I think that's about it. I'll let everyone else share, and then maybe if people start sharing their workplace experiences, I'll chime back in and I'll mute my line. And thanks for taking my call.
Much obliged. Bay Area mom. Good luck to her young scholar. Hope he's doing great things and staying safe. Those children, it's, I already said, and we talked to, as I said, educators who said that they were working with white children who were not distancing, like their parents, not taking it serious. And it was just a nightmare trying to, get them to calm down, be safe, not be running around and, touching and all that, being children, that it was really hard. So I can't even imagine working with them especially younger children, like 6, 7, 8, whatever it is, like, oh man, like, yeah, it would just be, it would be a nightmare. In terms of the home component, and the same thing that I said, even if it was, you know, I was working with other black people, I wouldn't be talking with them either. Unless I like knew them, we had a great rapport. Like I'd known them for years and they got autographed copy of the ISIS papers and all the rest of it. But yeah, I wouldn't be talking to them either. Just like, wow, that is crazy. All right, get back to working with the child and doing the rest of it. Like, oh yeah, because they, you just never know. You end up saying that, you know, this is terrorism or something of that nature, and they end up reporting you. I think the best protocol is just keep it on the child or keep it on the job. And yeah, you have nothing to say. They make whatever comments, even to other black people, they let them make whatever comments, and boop, back to the workplace, whatever is what we're supposed to be doing for our job. The point about the temp workers, great point as well. If you know you have certain workers, you're not going to give them benefits, even if they're so-called essential employees, and you're not going to provide them with full medical benefits, and you're not going to provide them with the vaccine or what have you, maybe we make sure we don't put them in harm's way. You know, we'll minimize their exposure since we're not hooking them up. We'll make the, or if we are going to expose them, maybe we at least give some sort of temporary benefits, vaccine, that sort of thing. No. That's why some folks said these are not essential employees. These are disposable employees. And again, this is disproportionately non-white people who are in these positions, temporary employees and other things where they can get lesser wages, lesser benefits, less protection. Let's see. Check both the phone line in. The email, let's see, other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I hope everyone's having the best time and week, whatever. It's been rough. I feel, you know, very fortunate. I'm back at, you know, doing what I did last season to this time, that time. And they did have some, I remember I told you about like the little fireside chat. So they look like they made minimal improvements, nothing serious for what I can see, but I'm not a permanent worker there. But I just feel very fortunate. They do frown upon talking about the political stuff. But they did, they sent out an email saying that they contacted employees in the D.C. area to make sure they were okay and nothing happened to them. Everybody's working, but they give COVID relief, well, I guess semi-COVID relief for your internet. Not a lot, but, you know, something's better than nothing. Because, you know, we have to use, like, really good internet. We have to have good internet service to do the job. And, so far, I mean, I haven't really done anything besides training. And, you know, I've been fortunate to do that because I work, you know, it's a job from home. So I'm trying to keep up and do what I'm supposed to do. And if something goes wrong, I guess I'll let you know. But I hope everyone's okay, especially the essential workers, because I know you are in contact with lots of people and it is very dangerous. I mean, even before, I know, like, even if you were, you know, maintenance and janitor, cleanups, the bathroom is awful, especially, you know, a female bathroom because they're extra fluid. Don't want to go into detail, but now with this, it's just, you know, so I do hope everyone can stay safe. And, you know, I do agree, definitely don't talk about it at work. That's one, I guess, one of the fortunate things of having someone live with me now. I can get all that out with that person. And then I can go to work and not worry about that. Thank you.
Intelligent. Very intelligent. I think some people, they'll talk about it. I mean, it's with people, so the work environment is a social environment, we shouldn't think of it as this is our time to socialize, we being victims of white supremacy, because it's not that at all. Like, this is combat, like warfare behind enemy lines. Like, I'm not going here to catch up on gossip and the latest fashion and, you know, the latest what happened on the television shows and, you know, what's going on with President Trump and the wackiness. And that's not what this is at all. Even if you have people there that you have a great rapport with, that's not why I'm going to work. And I think for a lot of us, that's the way we think of it. You know, this is our socializing time. And a lot of that gets encouraged, you know, just talking about goofiness while we come there. Man, that can be a huge trap, huge problem. Things like this week, great illustration why, like I said, it's going to continue for the rest of the month. So just get a really solid code about all of that. If they want to send hugs and kisses to, you know, our branch in D.C. and we hope our sisters and brothers in the nation capitals are safe and all the rest of it. All right, we had our moment of silence and wish them well. Now let's get back to business. Like, not, that's not a springboard to leap into anything or commentary, especially the places where they've had those fireside chats and all. Like, no way. Like, all about business. I'm not here to socialize. Friday night, even with the other victims. That's not why I'm here. Let's just stick to business. Excellent. Socialize at home. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I will share emails as we go. UntilJustice@gmail.com. We had a black female victim of white supremacy. She wrote in. So we were talking about people that were taking the vaccine, not taking the vaccine. We had a little, had some of both. Some people saying they were taking it and or have already taken it. And I mean, obviously other folks saying no way, never, ever. Person wrote in. Hello, Gus. May this find you as well as possible. Still write poorly. I wanted to forward you an email that I received from Professor Vernelia Randall regarding the COVID-19 vaccine and essential workers. The original questions are below in yellow highlight, and her response is in green. This may be helpful to the CAL's audience, particularly those who listen to the Workplace Racism program. Because of my schedule, I can't listen to most of the programs live, so I thought I would share via email, and if you think it might be helpful, feel free to pass it on. Let's see. Oh, okay, so here we go. Trying to make sure I got the question. Oh, there it is. I wanted to know what Professor Randall's thoughts are on essential workers opting out of getting the vaccine. What would you say to black people who are essential workers who are nervous or suspicious about the vaccine in terms of the history of racism in medicine and about whether the vaccine has undergone the proper time frame for testing? Seeking logically sound help and information. Thank you kindly. Her answer, Professor Vernelia Randall, she's been on the CALS many, many times. I forgot she's been on so many times over the years, all the way back to when we first got back on the air in 2009, and then most recently just a few months back, and she talked about the Rona and all the rest of it. Always great info. She responded, I would say, given our history and experience, it is a rational choice to adopt a wait-and-see attitude on a neo-vaccine that has only 2 months of history. That said, anyone who plans to wait and see has an extra responsibility to always wear masks, social distance, and hand wash, and to assure that others around them do the same. By the way, I am a 73-year-old black woman with many comorbidities, but I don't plan to take the vaccine for another 6 to 12 months. I am, of course, following my own advice. Vernelia Randall, professor of law, and she is a nurse. She does have medical background. I said before, like, I don't care, people that, you know, I read something on the CDC and this is my car. I don't care. That is not Vernelia Randall. She is actually a professor of law and a nurse with years, I think decades of experience. She listed her lofty credentials on the program and in her book that she wrote about racism in the medical profession. But that is from Vernelia Randall. I'm very glad one of our listeners was able to write and get some direct feedback from her. But she says no vaccine from her. She's distancing, washing her hands, staying away from folks. But that's her, just her personal stance, not anything that she is endorsing or promoting other people to follow. Much obliged, listener, for sharing. Untiljustice@gmail.com, the email address again. Let's see. Let other folks, if they have commentary, questions, again, not for spectators. If you are dealing with the virus situation or, I guess, the vaccine situation in your workplace, if that's something where you all are being, I don't know, asked, maybe encouraged to think about and or get the vaccine. If that's coming up, if all of the violence that happened in D.C., if that's coming up in the workplace, certainly you can let us know how you dealt with that, hopefully in an evasive, successfully evasive manner. If all of the other hazards that we were dealing with before all of this, and just trying to get a raise, making sure that you're called by your proper name, all the rest of it, feel free and let us know how all of that is transpiring in 2021 as well. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir. Greetings.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to the callers and participants. I recently joined a group within my company. It's called the like a black professionals group, so to speak. What they basically do is try to plan events within the company to, to help or give resources towards non-white people in the company. I don't know, it's been a little bit difficult doing this process. They've put me on as one of the people that are doing the events. Other people within the group are doing the assisting. The company we work for is, of course, white-owned, major international company. And they're doing the status quo that everybody else is doing, which is just bringing in people to have discussions about racism so they don't look as racist. I just feel like that's the dynamic and the wave that's going on at the current moment. In the process of doing this, I tried to get a couple of people to come in. I actually wanted, I forgot his, I don't remember his full name. I was looking for, he has a book that we covered, Two-Faced Racism. I think his name is, Joe Feegan. I was trying to email him and try to see if I could get him to come to actually do some kind of talk or speak or anything like that, just to try to get somebody that's white that's there, because it's less, I don't know how to explain it, it's just less threatening to the majority of people. So we ended up getting somebody that was a Howard University graduate that speaks on race, but she speaks on it from she uses the terminology bias as a non-white female, that's what she uses. But I still think people can learn certain things from it. But my group, specifically the person in charge of this event, she's asking me, can we change this so that she doesn't use the terms like mainly black and white or racism? Can it be more broad
to cover other groups of people, like, and not be just about race, but be about, you know, prejudice and these other things. And I thought it was just interesting because, you know, I didn't want to come across as they classify as too militant, but at the same token, I didn't want to take away the kind of integrity of the program, because I felt like some of the things that this individual was offering could be very helpful in giving people some kind of aspect and dealing and having an open discussion about quote unquote racism. So it's the third time actually she's asked me, can I make sure that she's not talking about racism only? And I'm a little concerned at this point. The event is going to be coming up sometime this month. And I don't really feel comfortable going back to this person that we invited. We paid for her to come already. And then telling her not to do too much talk about your main topic and the main thing that is this quote unquote disease in America. Like, it's a little difficult right now. And I've been trying to gear back. I've been trying to stay away from having discussions with her so that she doesn't keep asking me this question. And I'm trying to figure out a way to be more tactful about it, but eventually I'm going to have to talk to her. I've just been a little bad in figuring out the right words and things to say to her in regards to it. I've even picked up Bobby E. Wright's book, Psychopathic Racial Personality, and reading through it, there's just a lot of information in there. I'm highlighting it like a lot, especially the section about Black suicide. But again, I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm trying to write it down and come up with words. And if anybody has any take on it or any advice, greatly appreciated. But it's just something I wanted to share. That's it. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, sir. Are you in charge of this program? Like, was it you? Like, I thought you said that you made a suggestion to say, hey, maybe we could get Joe Feagin or Al Sharpton to come and do the speech. Like, was it you that actually has the hiring budget to pick this young lady to come and do the speech? Or is it someone else and you're just giving, like, suggestions about what's going to happen here?
I am one of the event planners. There are two of us. Mm. And the other people are in charge of assisting with the program. But I put the suggestion out on the table, and I was able to get the speaker from Howard University, and they immediately accepted it, gravitated to it. But I'm not the one that makes the last call on it, not by a long shot. There's a quote-unquote white woman that's actually in charge of that. She's in charge of deciding on if there's a budget spent on it and everything. And she green-lighted it. I'm wondering if she's being told, if the non-white female is being told by the white woman that, can we talk about a little bit more than that? And if that's the case, I really don't know how to, again, I don't know how to navigate that. I'm trying to figure it out still. And I've been just, you know, a little bit stuck, so to speak.
That always great to know who is in charge. Especially if it's not me. Like, I didn't green light this project. Like, I didn't bankroll it. Everybody here is aware of that. That's not a surprise to then come and make it seem like, hey, maybe you can see if we can talk and include some things other than, like, you don't even need to ask me. You just go to her directly and be like, hey, we're not just going to talk about racism. Add some intersectionality or some LGBTQI or, you know, patriarchy, something, toxic black masculinity, something else, you know, reach all the people. I mean, that is so to be expected. That's why generally my view, I don't want to be involved in these types of spectacles because they are not sincerely about solving the problem. This is what you can expect. Conflation. And I think we had some folks before it started out, it was supposed to be about black mental health in the workplace. And it moved totally away from that to, like, LGBTQ issues and, you know, marshmallows in the workplace. Like, what? Wait a minute. We were talking about black mental health in the workplace. Like, what are we going to do about that? Oh, we get to that later. We get to that. We've got these marshmallows here, right? Like, man, like, that is to be expected. So, if it were me, since I know that I'm not in charge, you all can do whatever you want. I do not, you know, have, I personally feel like these events are not going to be very helpful at all. And generally I feel like they're more damaging than not, just in terms of wasting time, not being able to address things in a correct, accurate manner. This sort of thing, white people want to step up and introduce, well, I want to talk about patriarchy and I want to talk about sexism and LGBTQ. I think they had one of the clips, they had one of the persons said, well, with in this individual, their pronouns are they and them. And see, and that'll end up taking up 40 minutes of the program. We got 2 hours where we started off inviting someone from an HBCU. We're going to come and talk about racism. And now, well, we're going to take about 40 minutes of this and we're going to talk about sexual orientation in the 21st century. Like, okay, we can do that. I guess that might be a problem and all these other things. But we originally, this was supposed to be about race. And particularly, I guess the one way you could, if you want to address it, that's it. Personally, if it was me, hey, what is your nickel? If you want to have this person come in and switch it up and not talk about racism at all or talk about bias or whatever you want them to talk about, it's your nickel. I'm just hanging out for the day and hoping to not get fired. Like, that would be my take on the whole thing. I'm not asking any question, or I might ask a question, but I'm generally just going to hang out and observe, see what the white people do, and hoping I don't get fired if I get a raise after all this is over. Woo, great. However, if I did want to address it, maybe the one way that I would, it wouldn't even be about, you know, is it correct or incorrect? It would just be, what did we invite this person to address? And then I can stay in the question lane. Like, is it correct? Like, are we switching it up on them? If we invited them, like, let's look at the language. Like, we invited such and such, this young lady from Howard, to come in and give a presentation on boo. Now, if we invited her to come in and talk about racism, and now we come in at the last moment and tell her, well, can we change that up? Let's make it racism and whatever, you know, I don't know what she said specifically that she would like to add to it. But is that correct? Like, do you do that to people? Do you ask them to come in and address a topic and then switch it up on them after you've already invited them and given them the topic? Like, is that the correct thing to do? And particularly in this context. But generally, I wouldn't even be willing to do that. But I think that might be. That might be one way that it could be addressed, because I think generally speaking, that is, that would at least be potentially a problem. Like, you should generally have a firm idea about, this is why I'm reaching out to ask you to come and talk to us, and not flip flopping and switching around. And, oh, wait, I know I did say we were going to talk about racism, but maybe let's add something else to it. Let's maybe add racism in cooking or racism in comic books, something else. Just, you know, give it some spice. But like I said, generally, I would expect white people to do that, and I wouldn't care. Like, I'd have no expectation that they're going to do anything constructive, even if they talked about racism all day long, that it's going to be nonsense anyway. So whatever, whatever you want to talk about, racism in marshmallows, racism in cabbage, whatever, it's your nickel. I will sit attentively, maybe ask a question, but I will sit and hope I am not fired by the time this is all over. Did any other folks have suggestions about how you would navigate all of this? He tried to do something constructive, make a suggestion, see if he could get a black person to come in and make a few nickels, one, for themselves, and then maybe share some constructive ideas for other people to talk about, or bias, I guess. But now he has been usurped. No surprise. A white woman interjects. Hey, maybe we could talk about racism. Did she specify, like, what? Well, I guess that would be one too. Like, what is it that you would like to add to the discussion? Or was it just to make sure that we include everybody? Because I think racism would include everybody. Like, everybody is involved in this problem of racism in one way or another, victim or perpetrator. But did she specify, like, you would like her to address racism and what else specifically?
It seems like she wants not just racism for, you know, on a broad scale. She's talking about, like, including, like, people that are just biased, you know, biased against people's sexuality and gender and all these other, every, the whole spiel. Like, that, to me, when I heard that, my first thought was it takes away from the actual conversation that we were trying to have, which was racism in the time of COVID, like how it's affecting, this was the initial, my main, proposition was racism in the time of COVID. Like, let's discuss how it affects non-white people, specifically Black people, considering we have so much social upheaval coming up more to the surface on media. And then at the same time, we're dealing with a quote-unquote pandemic. How is it affecting Black people mentally? And then from there, people wanted to throw in bias and gender. And I've been trying to just, you know, keep that same focus. That's what I want, because I think that's the most constructive thing that we could probably talk about within our quote-unquote company, you know, so, or plantation, I should say. So that's what ended up happening.
To be expected. Now, I don't know who the person is who has invited, and I also don't know who the liaison is, if it's you or if it's this white woman who green-lighted and has the purse strings for all of this. If she is the liaison that's contacting the guest speaker, if it's you, I don't know. This might be a victim of racism who is less confused, who might understand what's happening with all of this. And they might say, like, hey, if I was asked to talk about racism, we can address, you know, so-called bias, but this is one of the ways that racism is practiced. We're moving away from the topic that I was invited to speak on to now talk about other things. This is the topic to address, not to move off and try and touch on all these other issues, which are important and can be talked at another time. But you didn't ask me to come in to talk about, you know, bias and LGBT. That's not what I was asked to come and speak about, you know, or... And I think for many, many victims, intersectionality and all of that is very, very popular. So many, many victims of racism, conflation has confused us. So we get very, very diluted in our discussion of racism. Where, yes, yes, absolutely. And toxic Black males and, you know, all of that will easily come into the dialogue. So, we'll just have to say, I was going to say, if you're the contact person, you could just ask them directly. You could say, hey, they wanted to know, is it possible to address beyond that? I know we asked you to talk about racism. How do you feel about that? And see what she says. And then you could kind of feel out, is this someone who, you know, oh yeah, I'm excited to do that. No problem. I already plan to talk about other issues of bias, or they, you know, hey, those things are important, but we're going to stay focused on the problem. You can kind of feel out. But if you're not the contact person, you know, and that could pose risks too. They'd be like, hey, I have this militant Negro contact me and, you know, try and tell me we're going to talk about white supremacy or something. Get me in trouble. So that's why I said my general like leaning is these are not going to be constructive. Like, the white people are going to do everything possible to sabotage them. I think one of the slick moves they did before, we had non-white people who were supposed to do some sort of similar type of thing, a big meeting, let's address racism or what have you. And so they had done all this planning and all the rest of it, and it was a white man involved, and he dropped out halfway along. Like, I'm good. I'm not wasting my time with it. So then they get closer to the date, and they say, oh, wait a minute. We'll have to postpone this indefinitely. We'll have to go through human resources to make sure that we're not violating policy or procedure, and make sure that we don't get in any trouble here. We'll announce a rain date in the future. It was ended up still haven't got a rain date. This was months ago. We still didn't get a makeup date for that one. So I just have such low expectations for these events. It's very difficult for me to put very much energy in trying to make them constructive, because just everything about the environment, like I said, you're not the point person, you're not the contact person, you're not the budget person in all of this. Like, any white or this white woman at least can just come in at any moment and we're not going to do this. We're going to cancel it, or we're going to talk about something else, or lots of things. And just lots of different ways where they disrupt these events to make them spectacles. That was a word that I used when we started out all this, spectacles. I could be wrong, though. Do we, any folks have suggestions? Any folks that are listening in, any suggestions for, you know, how you can maybe make this a little bit more constructive, what you would do?
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Does the gentleman, do you want to continue in this line of activity, or like, did you get trapped into this or something, sir?
Well, what occurred, and again, by the way, I appreciate you contributing. Basically, what I was doing was, because this is a new year, and last year there were so many things going on, I thought it would be helpful or constructive to get involved in this kind of group within the company to see exactly what would unfold. And immediately, this is our first event. This is the first time this is going up. And mind you, and I'm just giving some context, some backdrop. I originally had the idea, and it was set up for October. And it was supposed to be about mental health for, you know, Black people in America, due to, you know, all the things I just spoke about. And the idea all of a sudden got put on the back burner for over a month. And the head of HR all of a sudden came out and said, we're going to have a mental health month, and this is about COVID, and we're going to do this for COVID, and because people need mental health. And I had been saying this, I've been giving this idea and this topic out for over a month, and then all of a sudden the head of HR had the concept. It was a little weird. And then now we're finally getting this so-called event put up, but now they're asking to kind of soften it up. So after this, I'm done. You know, this was pretty much the same perspective as Gus has, was my code. And I just figured maybe there might be something constructive I can get out of it, but I'm realizing that there are too many of us that are not on the same page, not on code with certain things. And I get it. I understand why we all need our paychecks, but I just don't want to waste my time and energy anymore. And after this, I'm done. I'm not being involved in any more events and with the group, as far as I'm concerned. It's just not helpful.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you made up your mind not to do this anymore. So I agree with a lot of what he said, with what Gus said, but just I think one thing, you know, definitely want to do is go back, you know, because they have a lot of these things in writing, everything, so to speak. If this is big plan, go over what is the purpose of this. Is the purpose of it diversity? Is the purpose of it racism? And you invited somebody to talk about racism, they said yes, you know. What's the problem? You know, again, check the policy. Even if, you know, for something like this, check the policy for putting, I'm sure there is, for putting events together and your participation. And just ask them, well, what is the purpose? Because I thought the purpose was this. And if they tell you a different purpose, you can just say, I apologize. You know, I thought this was something different. I think my time would be best spent contributing to the company in the way I was hired to do so. And, you know, thank you for this opportunity. Maybe something else, you know, when our purposes align, we can work together again, which probably won't happen. But, you know, blah, 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 corporate stuff. Our purposes realign, you know, then we can work together again. Thank you for this opportunity, you know, to participate, to let my feelings be known or whatever. Then go back to your desk or job office, whatever, and do what you got to do. You know, just corporate it up, you know.
I understand. I appreciate it.
No problem.
definitely appreciate the ambition. It's always great to have ambition for a new year, counter-racist ambitions and trying to get out to solve the problem. It's just so difficult in a workplace setting for all the reasons that you mentioned, and then just having other victims of white supremacy who are still confused, still learning, and where they don't understand. When you don't understand racism, white supremacy, it's very easy to be confused, and particularly when you have white people who are manipulating the situation and they want to move you away from racism. They want to move this conversation into other things. And as you said, for victims of racism, trying to keep my paycheck, trying to get my raise. COVID is going on. I'm already stressed. You heard all these people talking about being unemployed. I don't want to be in that number. Like, oof. Yes, anything. Race, talking about racism is stressful. Yes, marshmallows. Yes, let's soften this up. Exactly. Marshmallows. Soft, white. Anything but racism. Like, that is, you know, I mean, that is the result of terrorism. When you have people fearful of being fired, lots of black people get punished for talking about racism. That is a natural consequence. You end up with people who are reluctant to address the subject matter, and then white people come around and further manipulate and discourage you from addressing it too. So yeah, just for many, many reasons, those panels and programs and events, just, they are designed to waste time. And even in my view, sometimes they, I guess you could call it maybe a more sinister perspective. That way they can just keep tabs on the non-white people and what they're thinking, what ideas they might have. We can choke them out before they gain hold. Like, yeah, I think lots of folks have all over the world. I think lots of victims have concluded the same thing. Like, yeah, this is not a constructive investment of time and energy. This is not serious about addressing racism, white supremacy. And yeah, confusion is boy, if you want an experiment, and I have said that, these can be environments where you can do experiments, right? Just to see, you know, kind of what happens, that type of thing, to a degree where it's still safe. But I mean, wow, you're talking about an environment where you can learn, hey, united, independent. Just because I am with other individuals who are classified as black, not white, that does not mean we are homies, brothers, sisters, pals, friends, nothing. United, independent. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be a great experiment opportunity to learn why that should be like bedrock code for victims of racism.
Can I chime in on something you said? You said it was to you in some ways sinister. And I think that's exactly what I saw about a year ago within the company at one of these events where it was all non-white people. It was the Asian group. It was the so-called Hispanic group, the Middle Eastern group, and the Black professionals group. And for some strange reason, there was one white woman in there mediating everything. And I found it was like weird. And she was quote unquote, like, she was like, if somebody said something that was, and it was deemed a little bit edgy, like they used the word like bigot, which I don't think is accurate at all, but they use terms like that. She would come in and go, well, let's not say that. And here, that's not really a name calling. We don't really want to do this. And she would kind of trying to control the dialogue. And she had the microphone in her hand along with the other panelists, but she wasn't on the panel. And I was looking at this in the back, and there was an older black woman in the front. And she came to me later on, and we worked together, and she was just like, what the hell was that woman doing here? Like, why is she in the middle? She has no business being in a completely non-white group. Based on what I thought, immediately I was like, she's a spy. She's there to gather information, to find out what the non-white people are talking about. What are they doing when they get together in the hut and talk about overthrowing the plantation? Like, that was her job. you know, and in seeing it, when you say sinister, I think it's something that's done all the time to stay one step ahead of the quote unquote people that are actually trying or making some effort to be constructive within the movement and whatsoever. It strikes me as something that's a very, very well done task, let's say, or deed. I'm in my line.
The bigot, that's my word, the bigot. People still say that in 2021. Amazing. Although I do agree with her, no name calling. Endorse that all the time. No name calling. Don't name call white people. Don't name call other non-white people. I totally agree there. But I mean, she's there to be white. I'm in charge. Here to monitor the, as you called it, the plantation. Got to keep surveillance on the plant. Sometimes we got to keep direct surveillance on the plantation. Can't have you all in here calling Becky a bigot and all the rest. Like, wait a minute now. Let this thing, exactly what I said, got to choke this thing out before it gets out of hand. Like, whoa, make sure we have a set of eyeballs directly here. Let you all get too full of yourselves. Get some ideas rolling here before it gets out of hand. Number is 720. Again, and even that, in my view, shows a level of confusion. Nobody thinks to ask, like, who is this white woman? Why are you here? I don't know. Like, if this is a group, is it your job to be here? Are you a part of the group? Or is this your task for the company to come in, monitor, make sure that we don't call anyone a bigot? Just asking questions so that we know, you know, what her role is. Is she with human resource? Like, just lots of, just so I know, like, who are you recording this? just so that we know, like, to have that sort of thing happen and none of the black people, like, question her so that we're all informed about who she is, what's her role. Are you taking notes that are going to be given to anyone else in the business? Like, for that sort of dynamic to happen, like, whew, what does it mean to be white? And again, man, there's only one group of people who are confused about white supremacy racism. To have a dynamic like that, that white woman is not in any way confused about racism. No way, shape, form. Even if the non-white people thought of asking some of those questions and even better ones that I just posed. Who are you? Do you work for human resources? Is this conversation being recorded or transcribed? Will it be shared with someone if it's being recorded or they might have had, you know, even better questions than that. But if they didn't ask them, that goes back to that fear, too, like not even being able to ask really important, pertinent questions pertaining to your health and safety, maybe even employment at that job. And you're not able to ask them because we're scared of questioning a white person. Like, wow, she certainly wasn't afraid of questioning you. In fact, even beyond, like, hey, we don't say bigot here. Watch your tone. not confused about white supremacy racism at all. Let's see. Other folks, if you have any suggestions for, I guess, the group scenario, your own situation, if you had to deal with talking about the chaos, terrorism in Washington, D.C. from this week, you can let us know that as well. The number is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone. What I had been just hearing, what comes to my mind is four or five questions that Mr. Fuller suggests in a counter-racist code on what to ask yourself, or it may be asking someone else. And I think it's like it's in this form. What would I like to do, or what do you want to do? How do you go about, how are you going to about going to go about doing what you want to do or is asked to do? It depends on the situation. What's the other two? Number three is something like,
how do you expect why about doing it?
Excuse me?
Sorry to interrupt you. I think it was, how do you expect to go about doing it, I think that's one of them.
Yeah, and you know, and why. And then the last one, I know it's the most significant one, what do you expect the constructive outcome, or what do you expect the outcome to be based on those prior three questions? And I think by going by that particular code, you would personally get a general good evaluation of something before you actually volunteer yourself, if it's with someone else, or to enact something that of your own prior thought. You would have a pretty good evaluation of it, you know, and you know, especially in the workplace, which you can't afford to make, you know, many mistakes. Yeah, I think that particular code would be suffice. And things such as what I had just recently been hearing about, you know, involving oneself in some sort of program, you know, like the ones that I was hearing on the job. The races are very good at recruiting non-white people. Because they know under the global system of racist white supremacy that a lot of non-white people are aware of mistreatment on the job, and so they would, you know, go and ask or recruit someone by giving some kind of complimentary type of, that's the easiest way to get us, is by complimenting us on something that they either heard us say or did, and before you know it, you're the chairperson for the some sort of committee or something, you know, and you're the one who would select someone to come and speak. And then bring them by me because I'm the person who pays the bills for that person to come in and whatnot, and I decide on what, you know, that sort of thing, you know, and that, so they're pretty good at that. They're pretty good at that because they know that there is such thing as racist white supremacy, and they know that the victims are, a lot of victims are interested in trying to solve the problem, so they would kind of like encourage that sometimes. But my question would be on its honesty for first and foremost, that you would really get something out of it, and, you know. And I haven't seen it a whole lot, and I went through a job for a couple of decades. You know, and things don't work out too good, you know, as far as that concern on the job. And it basically what it is, what it helps them is to be better racist. That's really what it helps them to do. They hear some sort of strategy, some sort of thought. Oh, let me write that down. You know, so they can still practice racist white supremacy in the most sophisticated and or refined fashion. And that's basically what I was thinking about. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. Always great to kind of make an evaluation, ask some questions, try to assess your use of time and energy, especially for these like workplace projects and what have you. I think a great one for the workplace is asking, like, how much control can I expect to exert in this given project, situation, whatever it is? Like, if this is some, like with this scenario, like, I don't control the hiring budget. I didn't pick this person. Am I even the contact? Am I the liaison for this person? Am I the person that she's been in touch with and getting this whole thing set up? If the answer to all of those questions is no, like, ooh, I'm going to have very little, like, ability to influence what's happening. Like, I can say something, but I mean, if it's a white person who's making all the important decisions and has all of the immediate power in this situation, like, I have to be really realistic about expectations in terms of, you know, what I can reasonably expect from all of this. And it would have to be a real low bar if I got nothing here. I'm not in control of, I'm basically a spectator. That's it. Like, where a retired firefighter said, well, they will end up, oh my goodness, you are such a smart little colored fella. We will put you, we'll make you the president, CEO of our diversification committee here. And we'll have a little panel and we'll bring in a speaker and you give a suggestion as the CEO of the diversity committee, even though you are not the contact person, no hiring budget, you just make suggestions. And they might even come out when, you know, the speaker comes in. Yes, our CEO of our diversity committee, he gave a rousing recommendation that we have our really just lovely speaker today. She's going to give us great information. We have marshmallows, too. It's going to be outstanding. We're going to talk about bias, LGBTQ issues, veganism. It's going to be awesome. And thank our CEO of Diver. They got lots of tacky ways that they can do things like that. So just kind of evaluate that as you, you know, move into these projects. Is this really, how much direct control am I going to have about what's going to happen? Am I going to have the ability to really impact, to influence the events that are transpiring? Or am I just going to be spectating in a really tacky manner, spectating? Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, or I guess you could drop us an email to untiljustice@gmail.com. Other folks who are with us, hand up.
Hi, Gus.
Greetings be in Toronto.
Greetings to you, caller and listeners. Yes, to answer the question, for the gentleman who had recently spoken regarding his situation, I would recommend if HR is asking him to go back to the speaker that he had suggested to make alterations, which is really just showing lack of courtesy on the company's part, just the lack of disrespect, because it's one thing to put material together, but then to change it last minute like that is just, what I would recommend for him to do is, if they're asking him to go back to the speaker, I would suggest that he request that HR contact the speaker on the rationale that should the speaker ask further information as to why the adjustments need to be changed, that he doesn't feel comfortable answering that because he doesn't really know why those changes are needed, and that perhaps HR has a more clearer point of view as to why those changes are. So if the speaker were to go to the source, then that would help clarify and provide information. That way it's taking it off of him and it's putting it back on HR, because HR is the one that's asking. HR is the one that should be giving the explanation. So that's what I would recommend. I've been able to do things like this recommendation in a similar fashion, and it has been fairly successful. When supervisors, HR, different, even peers at the same level, when they try to dump, just give it right back. And it's not a claim. It's truthful that, well, we're ignorant of the situation. We're ignorant as to why HR is requesting all these changes. So HR would be better equipped to explain why those changes are being requested. And as he's not part of HR, then he would not be in the position to answer those questions. And there's no need for him to be a mediator at that point. If such requests are being made. So that's for the first part. The second part, in terms of the storming of into the Capitol, I have been asked questions about that on the job. And so instead of discussing about my opinions, which I don't do on the job because I just think that it's a waste of time. I've said as an answer, it's quite interesting. I've noticed that there was a breach of confidentiality, being able to access the offices so easily. It just got me thinking, how is our protocols around confidentialities? You know, if something similar were to happen in our work environment, what protocols are in place? And if there's no protocols in place, how can I volunteer myself to get those protocols in place so you add credentials onto your position that way? So you turn it around into a win for you, if you can. But at least you can deflect it to breaches of confidentiality, or even bringing up, well, say if there was ever an active shooter, you know, what do we do in that situation? Like just bringing up these situations again, just to get the organization thinking, and to have them continue to recognize that you're always thinking about what's best for the company, when really, you know, we're really thinking about what's best for ourselves and how we can benefit from that. I do have two quick reports. The first one, and they both happened earlier today. The first one involves another white female with a dog. And yet again, at the plantation, decides to have this puppy on the property, and there's the big no trespassing sign. And I've brought this female's attention to the no trespassing sign, and she's telling me, oh, well, it's just a puppy. And I told her, well, although it's just a puppy, you know, as the dog owner, you're responsible for training your puppy to not be on people's property. And then she then said, my puppy will move. And I noticed that she was just standing there, because at that point I recognized that she was practicing white supremacy. She's not going to move along because of the fact that a black person had told her to move along. So I told her, logic dictates that when the owner starts walking, the puppy tends to follow. And she said, oh, yes. The puppy's going to go. We're going to go soon. And then she said, oh, looks like this is being a bad puppy. Despite seeing the sign there, it looks like this puppy just doesn't want to budge. And, you know, I just had it with her. And I just said, well, you know, who has the brains? After that, she left. The second report was I was on my way to my second destination to another plantation that I had to go supervise. And there was a white woman in a walker coming up to my vehicle asking for change. But she's getting too close to my vehicle, and I have all the windows up. So I start honking my horn as a deterrent to get her to move along. And she continues to stay there. And then she's like yelling at the window towards me saying, "Oh, crazy, crazy." And I'm just still honking the horn so that, you know, hoping if the police comes, they will see this and, you know, perhaps like help her move along and probably take her in. She did eventually leave because the traffic light dictated as such. However, she did come back just as the light turned green. She came back to my vehicle and started yelling at my vehicle and concerned that the droplets and COVID, I make sure that I have the sanitizer wipes in the car at all times, have the gloves in at all times. I just made sure that when I got to the other destination of the plantation, I just sanitized the area of the vehicle that she was around. And tomorrow I plan to take this vehicle for a good wash, you know, after being molested by that white female. Let's see. Other than that, my main thing is just, you know, keep informed about the vaccinations. I would highly recommend looking into what other countries, mostly white countries, are doing and the types of vaccinations they're using, because there are different batches from different manufacturers. So to definitely look into that to see if that might help in the decision. For myself, as I've mentioned before, I'm just going to stall as long as possible and use that wait-and-see tactic that Gus, you've mentioned earlier today. Thank you, and I leave the line.
Much obliged. Be in Toronto. White women with their dogs. Ongoing terrorism. And with the sign there, no less, like the just flagrant, like this nigra is not going to demand that I move. Like, I can read the sign. I don't care. We will move when we're good and ready. And I've seen that with white people, like, around the world, that same type of racist attitude when they have their canine. Like, doesn't matter if it's a puppy, it can be like a full adult Doberman Pinscher, pit bull, whatever. It'll be. I've been out where the dog was like hostile and snarling and teeth baring, like. No good-natured, warm, and cuddly at all. Like, I'm about to take a chunk out of you, white dog. It's like, whoa. And the dog isn't even on a leash. Like, hey, can you get your dog on a leash? I'm feeling threatened. Like, oh. He's just having fun. He just loves colored people. He just loves to cut. Don't you just love colored? Like, hey, I'm feeling threatened. He's growling. There's saliva coming out of his mouth. Like, he looks like he's about to take a chunk. Oh, you're so paranoid, you and Al Sharpton. Calm down. Same type of attitude. Just, you know, we'll move along when we're ready. Calm all that nonsense down. I probably wouldn't even say that much. Just get a photograph. Boop. Like, what? Yeah, you're trespassing, just so that we'll have evidence if this happens in the future and or unruly dog droppings, being unresponsible as a pet owner, which that right there, where you're allowing your hound to transgress on my land, irresponsible dog owner, just boop, photograph, minimize the words. I think the tip to our previous caller about the no dumping, I think that's a solid one as well. when they're doing like tacky things like, oh, can we go back and maybe get the speaker to change up and not talk about bigotry, get her to talk about other things, like having them to do that as opposed to dumping those type of assignments off on other non-white people can be helpful as well. Let's see. Oh, I love the if they're going to talk about the whole insurrection, as they call it, white terrorism that happened this week, to see if you can redirect, like, yes, it was awful. Oh, it's one of the worst scourges that I've seen in my lifetime. Speaking of which, what procedures, what protocols do we have in place to make sure we don't have a similar breach in our workspace? And if we don't have those measures in place, oh, I volunteer my time and energy to get cracking on that right now. My goodness. Safety in the workplace, like everybody should be on extra alert about safety in the workplace. Like, absolutely. We don't want that sort of mayhem here. Like, wow, what are our security protocols? And we do this and we do. They even said that at the Capitol, we'll probably have some of that on the compensatory call. But they said, oh, yeah, some of these security folks are fired, like right now. Like, they don't, some of them did resign. They said, oh, yeah, they don't resign. They're going to be fired like soon as we take office in, you know, 2 days or whatever it is. Like, get a pink slip ready, typed up right now. That's going to be job number one. Some folks are getting fired. Breach of protocol in every way imaginable, Miriam Carey. But yeah, flip that around if it comes up. Like, let's do a thorough evaluation of our safety protocols for our workplace. Context of white supremacy, neutralizing workplace racism. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have thoughts on what we have discussed thus far, tips for our male caller who got wrangled into this diversity meeting of some sort, try to be constructive about it, you know, ambitious, great ambitions to try to get constructive information out, but being sabotaged, white people want to, let's not talk about racism so much. Diversify our message a little bit. If you have any tips for him or some of the other folks be in Toronto, any of our other folks who dialed in, we have any folks who either you're going to take the vaccine or thinking about it, definitely not. If you're being pressured around that in your workplace, definitely share. I think that's so important. And I know we have listeners all around the world who would appreciate having more information so that they can make better informed decisions on all of that. In addition to all the craziness that happened this week, if that came up in your work environment. Other folks who are with us, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Let's see.
Can I be heard?
Bay Area mom, yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I think the guy, the gentleman that's doing the, because I remember when he brought it up before about the that diversity thing he got looped up in, I would do exactly as you stated and just pull out. I would give it back to them because it seems like you'll get tripped up, especially with the overseer, the white overseer there. That's not going to benefit you. It just cause a lot of problems. And you made an attempt. You did great. Be in Toronto. That's funny. Can I share my workplace experience?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. So the supervisor, the white lady who speaks Spanish, she's on maternity leave. So I got a younger Black supervisor over the cases. So she's over both cases, but she doesn't have as many hours. She only has a certain amount of hours on one and a certain amount of hours on the other. So I do believe that I was set up for failure because the supervisor, that the white supervisor that speaks Spanish, looks like she speaks Spanish. She came in the home once, but it was of no value. The second home she never went into. The programs had nothing to do with the children. They're still complicated to run. I just got a chance to talk to the new Black supervisor. I just emailed her privately and asked her, would she, can I talk to her? If she could call me versus all that typing. And so she set up an appointment, a paid appointment for me to talk to me. So I talked to her that afternoon. She did an overlap with me on the, my second client. And she kind of changed the program a bit and implemented a program as well. So she's going to come in on Monday and do a home visit at the young male's house so she can actually see the person and we can kind of go from there. If you would look in the notes, you wouldn't even know that the 3-year-old was nonverbal until, so she didn't even know he was nonverbal until a couple of days ago when I told her. She asked me what was the scale that he could talk. How well he could be talk. I said, well, a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say a 1.5. And so just to say, I'm saying that to say, even when recording information, the supervisor wasn't recording adequate information to help the black male client. So I guess she's on maternity leave until March. I don't know if she'll keep the case. I don't know how that'll work, her coming back in. But I'm going to get as much done with the Black supervisor as I can until I transition out, either in the company doing something else because they have a scheduler position, or out of the company doing something else. However, but I really don't. I know I'm going to be required to get a vaccine. I am not getting a vaccine. I don't care. Unless they, of course, you know, force you and you get snatched up and you get injected like that. But other than that, I'm not interested in a vaccine, not for any job. So, I don't know how that's going to work, but they keep hinting at it in these little meetings. And I'm just not going to be available for, I don't even know what that stuff is. And I get it, but it seems like even with the vaccines, I have to get it at least twice and it's still not guaranteed. And even if I had like with the flu, they didn't even do that with the flu vaccines. And I'm just really confused about this corona and how often would this vaccine be? Because I know every year we have to have a flu shot, but how often would this corona shot? And then if you have a new and improved version of corona coming out this year, what is that? So do those vaccines, the old vaccines, work with this new and improved corona that's coming out this year that's already out or however? So it's just not interested in the vaccine or shot. So that's all, and I'll mute my line and thanks.
Not interested in the vaccine. We've got some on much obliged Bay Area Mom. We have some on both sides, right? We have some listeners, callers who are they have already, in fact, have already got the vaccine or at least the first shot, and then you have to wait for a certain amount of time to elapse, and then you can get the round two. And then we have other folks who said, nope, not doing it, no way, no how, don't do vaccines. Not, like she said, unless they, you know, snatch me up and forcibly inject me. She said on the job they're already hinting about it and that sort of thing, which other people have talked to us about as well, saying that the job has been kind of aggressively encouraging employees to get vaccines with emails and that type of thing. Not requiring, but aggressively encouraging. Uh-oh. About to get in trouble. Let's see. Okay. But yeah, the vaccine, like I said, I appreciate it. Other folks can share, yay or nay, if you're going to do the vaccine, if you're not going to do the vaccine, if you're being pressured, if you think you're in a work type situation like we just heard where they're kind of suggesting or demanding whatever it is that employees be vaccinated, let us know. Though I think we had talked about that too, like with our Bay Area mom, the work environment where it just, I've talked about total lack of care for children, the culture of white supremacy, but these children, special needs and all of that, and we're just totally oblivious, like not even seeming aware of the deficits that this child has, like that the child is nonverbal and all the rest of it. And what? Nonverbal? Since when? This is startling. How long have you, like, what are you talking about? Like, man... And I said, like, it's not surprising. It's not, or I can't say that's an anomaly. That is very common throughout the education system, at least I'll say in the U.S. That sort of thing is so common, particularly when it is non-white students, black students, needs not being met at all. And especially the students that need the most help, they are getting the least help. Like, you lucky we even know your name. I mean, total embarrassment in every way, shape, form, which would just add, and I think for a lot of folks just adds to the frustration of the work. Like, we're not even, we can't even jokingly say that we're looking out for these children's best interests. Like, it is a total fraud. And that just, that adds to, for a lot of folks, adds to their frustrations with it all. Like, man, I'm not even, I got into this. A lot of folks say, hey, I got into this to try to help children and do something, and not even sabotaging that. Like, we're not even, you know, making a good effort to go out here and help these children. Like, man, system of white supremacy, lots of fraudulent activity, sabotaging of non-white people, children, older people, same thing. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. This week, it was quite a bit of things that occurred, especially with the COVID-19 and the I guess what the term they use, the insurrection, things like that, and the vaccine and everything. But I'll start with a victim of racism that's in the department that I work in. she was sharing that her attempted husband works as a nurse. And apparently, I guess they would be categorized as essential, the nurses. She said that her husband reported to her were fainting, like passing out, and having horrible reactions to this shot, you know, I guess it's a vaccine shot. So I guess she didn't say like what percentage or whatever, if it was the majority, but she sounded like it was a sizable amount of the nurses were having bad reactions to the shot, like passing out. That's how she phrased it. So she was like, nah, I don't want to get this shot. You know, I'm not going to do it. And, you know, she said she didn't even get the flu shot. So, you know, I'm just listening, you know, and that's what she said. My second one is, it was a Trump supporter, right? Because we have a restricted customer or limited customer access policy going on right now because we don't have the courthouse open unless it's by appointment, basically. So she says to me and to the other, because they got all of the black people once again, and it's more stark now because the white person is gone. So she says to me and the other black female, oh, I can tell he ain't want to deal with me. Okay. And I saw he had a Trump 2020 sticker on his binder. And I walked up to her about 5 minutes later. I said, so did he say anything to you? Like, what happened? Like, no, I could just tell. I said, so you could pick up on it, huh? Said, oh yeah, I could. So, but it's, hey, we all who you have back here. So, you either got me or him. Him meaning me. You either got me or him. Pick your poison. See, so the metaphor is right. A black person referring to another black person, me, pick your poison, myself or him. Okay. So I go off to lunch. I say, huh, I got to jot that one down now. So later on that day, I guess that was what, I don't know what, Wednesday? She's looking on the phone, said, they are turning up, basically. That's the term that was used up there. So I didn't know what was going on. So I get up to go to do my courier route, and a white woman seems to be upset, a white person that's over in the traffic area, looking on a cell phone. So this is just crazy. They're going all over the place. They're just breaking in and everything. So I'm like, dang, this, you know, something must be up. She's like, you didn't hear? I'm like, nah, I didn't hear. I've been too busy doing, you know, work. So yeah, you know, they broke into the White House, into the Capitol, right? So I was like, oh, wow, that's something else right there. So, you know, I'll catch you later. And I came back again into that same department 30 minutes later, and I saw her, the black person, pregnant black female, and a CLIC member. The CLIC member, I think, was codified, said, dang, you know what? Man, I don't even watch CNN, you know? My life is a lot better when I'm not watching it. I didn't believe that comment, but I think she already came up with some kind of code. It was already, you know, synchronized. So that's what she said to the other white person. Or they could have strategized that, pulled a black person into something. So I just walked in between them. So I noticed they were talking about that. As far as anything else concerning it, at the end of the day, that victim, black female, where I sit, she says, you know, be safe or whatever, you know, because there's no telling what things they can do. And I just want to make sure that, you know, we stay safe, especially us. Okay. I say, all right, well, you take care. I'll see you tomorrow. So I still haven't seen what was going on yet. You know, so all of that occurred. My next report is we have something called PTO donations, but I think it's rarely mentioned in the policy. And I think that people shouldn't, or it's been reported that people shouldn't announce that they, as an employee, need assistance in PTO if they're running out of time. Because in this context, a white woman, a CLIC member, of course, apparently is in need of PTO. So there was an email sent out by the white female supervisor. And guess who name was first? My name was first on that. My name, two black people name, after mine. And the way she worded it was very, I guess you could say eloquent, but it was carefully worded. She says, staff discussed cashing in or donating their PTO time from their pool into the coworker, the white female. So they were discussing donating this time when they're not supposed to be doing that. And if anything of the sort comes up, HR is supposed to mention it, the warden, right? So the supervisor is doing, she took it upon herself to send this email out in a way that she's not supposed to be doing. So she's mentioning the warden's name, saying that, oh, well, maybe another suggestion was such and such suggested that we should buy Publix, which is a supermarket down here in Florida, a Publix gift card. Maybe that'll help with food or whatever, groceries, because, you know, this person has a baby or whatever. But they were talking in great detail about helping her with insurance, FMLA. I'm like, you know, I was upset because, you know, I found an email that I sent March the 2nd, 2016, where my mother, an employee, needed time, you know, PTO. I didn't see any emails and everything like that about a willingness to donate time. You know, so I took it upon myself to donate, you know, almost 200 hours. So my mom could get a paycheck, you know. So I thought, man, what was all this before? So I didn't even respond to it. You know, they didn't even physically come up and ask me. So I don't know if she remembers it, but I don't even really care. But I do have that in place if she does plan to ask me that, because they apparently gathered together to try and get this person money. And then they even discussed trying to do a GoFundMe, you know. So, you know, the CLIC definitely trying to support each other there. I have two more. There was someone mentioned dogs earlier. A white woman was talking about names for her pet. And she said, man, I don't even know what I want to name my dog. I don't know if it's going to be Buckwheat now. I don't know if it's going to be Buckwheat or Scorpion or something like that. So So I wrote that one down, and I had a customer who I was helping out, black male, and, you know, I had to redact an arrest report because that's the policy. I had to redact, put the tape on it. And I, you know, I told him, you know, I needed him to hold for a little bit. And he says, oh, no problem, no problem, sir. You know, you're a black man. Take your time. I said, you know, I appreciate it. But, you know, he said black man, you know, whatnot. But that was an interesting call. He said, you're a black man. Take your time. So that's all I have to share. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
That is interesting. How'd you come to that conclusion, sir? Like, over the phone. Do you make any airline? I don't even know how I'd respond to that now. Like, do you ever make any errors when you make those type of assumptions when you're talking to a white person or a non-white person? Like, are you foolproof when you make these guesses that you're talking to a black person and a white person over the phone? Interesting. Given everything that happened this week, I guess all things considered, like, you know, hey, that's we'll take that one. Thank you. I will take my time as a black male. Thank you. I said they piled up the metaphors in the audio clips, and then we got even more of them. So the white feller, maybe he's one of the insurrectionists. He comes in with his Trump MAGA binder. He says, oh, I don't really want to have anything to do with this colored teller. And she says, oh, man, tough titty. You know, you got me or him. Nothing but colored folks back here today. Pick your poison. Like, I don't know. Like, pick your king. Pick your black queen. Like, I don't know. Something other than poison. Like, if we could not just. That's why I say be mindful. Because sometimes I'm sure she didn't think about it, you know, that way. That's not how she just, you know, we just use phrases. Yeah. Now, and I said that, too. Once you get emotional, she might have been a little more excited after having that. Like, look, this fella coming here. Crazy Trump supporters acting like he doesn't even want to help. I'm here working at the telling, even want to talk to us. Like, she might have been upset, and rightfully so. But then the metaphors can come out, like, just something to be mindful of. I would not believe, like, in the context of all this going down, like this week with the whatever we're calling it, riots, insurrection, terrorism, in the nation's capital and beyond. A white person saying that they don't watch CNN. In some respects, I don't even know what that has to do with this, because the chaos was on every news channel. So, you know, we could pick a network and we'd be seeing the same thing. But yeah, I don't know how that fits the situation. And I suspect you're probably lying. You probably do. White people generally brag about being well-versed with what's happening. So, yeah, if anything, I'd be saying, that sounds like my line. Like, that's the code that I tell people. When he's like, I don't even normally watch this. My goodness, I'm confused right now. Like, do you listen to the cows, ma'am? Like, what is going on? Like, let's see. The whole PTO help thing, like, that's so disgusting. I feel like I've heard that before, where white people, they got each other's back. If folks who are with us for the hate you give, like, white people, they got other white people's back. Like, why, if clear violation of the protocols and everything, you're not supposed to be talking about planning, ganging together to share PTO and all the rest of it. Ah, forget all that. They got a whole elaborate plan. Like, we can get Publix grocery cards, and we can get insurance, and we can get the PTO together, and all the, like, wow. And they just, they went, they, it's not like they went and got the custodial staff. They went and got all the way up. Let's get the warden's insight on this. We're going to need some powerful, bright, white brain power. Get this here plan. We got a white woman with children. We got a white mother. We got to make sure we look out for her. We got her back. And then they go send the email out and let's make sure we get our colored employees at the top of the list here. I'm sure they got a little extra PTO. They'll be eager to help get their name front and center. Like, wow. Any other time they click, they're not, you know, out and making sure they contact black people, like number one priority. Let's make sure we go get all the black people. Can't miss them. They got to be first included on this one. But soliciting PTO for our downed white colleague. Make sure the Negroes are at the top of the list for this one. Might even qualify that for unjust networking. Especially, as he said, like, dang, not that long ago, not ancient history, my mom needed help. Everybody needs help sometime, right? Nah. No organization. We can't get you a Publix card. We can't get you a gas card. Like, nothing. Tough nookies. Matter of fact, they'll come and remind you, like, oh, man, we sure would love to help, but we got policy and procedure about, you know, getting together to network on PTO. It'd be a violation. We would absolutely love to help, but yeah, we just can't do any networking, you know, causes trouble and that sort of thing. But I'll be praying for you. Have a blessed day. Like, tacky as can be. And then they get the whole company together. We pointed that out. People have said that, like, when it's been a white person is going to leave and they'll do these type of elaborate celebrations and things. It can be a black person who's worked at the company for like 60 years and they'll come around and give you an open bag of peanut M&Ms. Like, come on, make it plain, man. And that's why I said no response needed at all. I don't do any of it. No birthday parties, no holiday celebrations, no anniversaries, nothing.
And on the email,
mm-hmm.
Sorry to interrupt, Gus, but on that email, it was so, like, how she typed that out, you could tell that, you know, the unjust networking occurred. She says staff, using general terms, meaning white, that's code for the white staff, sat and discussed how they wanted to get this PTO time compiled up, because they have some kind of a policy where they say the benefactor gets taxed, you know, tax time is coming. So they then had it set up. It was so elaborated where they're talking about, I guess, a certain amount coming from certain people. And then she said that, oh, the warden said, the warden didn't offer to send an email out to staff that has a high amount of PTO. So this is all kind of criminal behavior. And I wasn't around when they was talking about this, so definitely unjust networking. But put the Negro name first. My name was first on that. And another person in the clique the next day, she sent a reply and said, you know what, I was just thinking, instead of a GoFundMe, I think it would be better if we did the PTO, you know, so it'll help out with insurance. So they were getting even more elaborate, more detailed with it. And I still ain't responding yet. So, yeah, that was more pieces of it.
White people can efficiently solve problems when they want to. Like, not just make sure you got help to get through the whole little Rona pandemic, but plan it out. Make sure, can't have a tax problem with this. And, you know, I put a little extra, put my thinking cap on about this here. You know, make sure that we get the insurance. I think that might be better than the GoFundMe. We don't want to trip her up taxi. It'll be April before you know it. So we don't want to cause a tax problem. Like, we'll put some white thought on this one. And, we got her. We got her back, like, for sure. Like, are you serious? black employees, black people that work right there, can't even get a trash can replaced. Like, man, and you put all this thought into something that really is criminal activity. This is against policy and procedure. And then to add insult to injury to say, well, I didn't send this out to the people with the most PTO. But we got the black people's names at the top. I would think the people with the most PTO, they should be at the top of the list. You got hours and hours to waste, like more hours than you're going to be able to use. Why wouldn't you go to them first? No. Let's get the black people first. Doesn't get any better than tacky. Unless it's buckwheat. Now, as soon as he started with the naming of the dog, that's like stale. That's right up there with like the lawn jockey and all of the tackiness, naming the dog after a black person. Like, it's so much of that. All kind of that. Right up there with naming the dog nigger. We've had a bunch of those too. Remember Dr. Welsing? She talked about she had one of her white college administrators, might have been the president at Antioch College, but he had a dog and, of course, named nigger. But that is way, way standard, like generations of that, white people naming the dog after their most revered nigra. And so, yes, we'll name the dog after good old buckwheat. I don't know how old this, even that goes back generations, because they got that one. Like, it could be buckwheat, like Little Rascals, buckwheat, Eddie Murphy, like lots of different ways where you would connect that one. So, yeah, doesn't get any better than tacky. Let's see. I guess that's another one, I guess, saying we need to stay safe. I guess, you know, I guess I'll take that. That's not name calling or anything. As long as he felt it was sincere, I'll take that one. And I mean, that is true. The environment that we are in, the white people are not going to be scheming and plotting to make sure that you all get replacement PTO and got a gas card and a Publix card so you can go get fresh water and some fruits and vet. Like, they are not going to have your back like that. So, yeah, I guess, you know, we do need to stay safe, especially us. But, yeah, I'd probably still be thinking United Independent. Like, I'm not going to be talking to you about all this either. Like, yes, stay safe. Talk to you tomorrow. I'm not going to be lulled into being too comfortable chatting with a non-white person, regardless of their well wishes or what the circumstances are. Like, that is a part of us staying safe, even from each other, unfortunately. Let's see. Gotta pick your poison, as they say sometimes. Geez, man, oh man. What a week at the courthouse, as usual. Much obliged. Our caller in Florida. Let's see. Did we miss any folks as we get close to the conclusion of the broadcast? We have about 10 minutes or so left. We should be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in. We'll certainly have lots more on the white terrorism insurrection, as it were, in D.C., the Rona, what has gone down the last 7 days. Even they had different video footage of the bombing that happened in Nashville. It's been so crazy just the last few days. I totally forgot, like, oh, yeah, they did have that bombing on Christmas Day, as they say, in Nashville. They had different, like, video footage so you could see what it looked like, and they had more details about that, but we'll try to catch up tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll have, should multiple OJ days next week. We should have OJ's chief investigator on the program as well, Pat McKenna, as we continue, hopefully with constructive information, not just wasting time in the midst of tumult and chaos, but hopefully getting constructive info on the system of racism, what it means to be white, by studying the criminal case of O.J. Simpson. But that should be next week. Pat McKenna, his lead in. He found the Furman tapes. Pat McKenna tracked it down, got the information, located Laura Hart McKinney and history. Pat McKenna should be with us next week. Anywho, the number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 If you would like to participate, email untiljustice@gmail.com. Other folks, any additional comments, observations they want to sneak in last few minutes before we get ready to wrap things up?
Hi, Gus.
Be in Toronto.
Hi. Just a quick aside here. I was just looking on the Amazon wish list. Is there a way in which to provide directions on how to send the items over?
Well, directions, I might.
Saying that it's showing items that ships to Canada, but I'm wanting to send to, off of the wish list here. But it's just an aside, I could take it offline too.
Let's see if I can do it where it doesn't take up a lot of time. Let's see. So if I was going to my wish list on Amazon, Gus T. Renegade, I think let me just grab something here. All right. So if you add something to the cart, once you, it should have a little line underneath. So if you look at the gift list, if you add something to the cart, there should be a little box underneath or line that said, "This is a gift." If you click that box, it should give you the option as you go through the process. It should give you the option. So it'll give you two addresses. One would be presumably for you in Canada, and the other would be me in Seattle, Washington.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Sorry, this is my first time actually navigating through this, so thank you so much.
For sure. Much obliged to all the folks who have nabbed goodies from the wish list. Hopefully constructive information over the years has been a hoot. I've got lots of, speaking of O.J. Simpson, lots of wonderful literature on the O.J. Simpson case via my wish list. I've been reading from Johnny Cochran's book and sharing that one quite a bit. Lots of constructive details as we read through the Simpson. We are starting the trial for people who are not in the book club. We are starting the actual trial next week. Next Thursday is the first day of the trial. I'm so excited. So all of the juicy bits of the Simpson case, the gloves, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. The EDTA and the blood, Mark Furman, all of the good parts, Now we are about to start with the trial beginning next week. So excited. And yes, lots of supplementary reading material as we proceed through the book club. Hopefully it has been constructive for the folks who have tuned in. Where I told, even workplace racism. Flipping workplace racism is right in the middle of that. They have freaking Mark Furman's co-workers. He apparently worked with black people on the police department who said, "Yeah, this fella planted a gun on me." Think not in the traditional sense, but like you're supposed to have secured firearms if you're a police officer. And he had some of his black co-workers on the police department who said, "Yeah, he had turned around and there's a shotgun that's not secured. I think Mark Furman did this, try and get me in trouble so I'd lose my job or, you know, get messed up on an assignment or something. I'm saying I'm reckless with firearms and what have you." Like, workplace racism. Imagine working with, that's your colleague, Mark Furman, Marsha Furman. Continuing, much obliged to be in Toronto. Appreciate. Other folks, comments they want to make sure they get in. We have now about 5 minutes or so left in the program. Everybody satisfied? Anything else they want to make sure they're in? If again, if we have listeners, if either way, really, if you get the vaccine, let us know. We had some folks who have taken the first round in the series of vaccines. Some people did it like reluctantly. Other people felt they were doing it to keep themselves safe, their family safe, you know, as best they could. So if you are going to get the vaccine or have done so already, let us know. Folks would love to get more information so that they can make quality decisions. If you are not going to do the vaccine, you can let us know that, let us know about that as well. Especially if there's any like pressure from your job, or other sources, around this. And, you know, if you've been able to kind of successfully, stave off the peer pressure, that would be good also, but I'm sure people around the world, would appreciate just having more information so we can all be a little bit more, informed about all this. The person who was telling us before about, I guess some of the nurses who were fainting after getting the virus, like, wow, that is a little scary. I guess it'd also be good to know in which virus the folks who've shared thus far have shared which virus which vaccine they've taken, because they have so many different ones. So let us know more details so we can be a little bit more informed, maybe have more questions to ask in this whole process. That would be helpful as well. Anything else folks need to get in? Everybody good?
Have you heard?
Caller in Florida, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. We also had, I guess, what people would say a historical event. They had the swearing in of the first black property appraiser and county sheriff, and then also the clerk got sworn in as well. But I noticed, and this is to be expected, it wasn't promoted very much, but you know, they got pictures of it and everything like that from the local news, and they briefly mentioned it at work in an email. So I wanted to mention that. And that's pretty much all I have.
That should be like front page of the newsletter. Like, my goodness, like the first black property appraiser and, you know, all these important positions. I mean, in 2021, that's kind of embarrassing. But, you know, front page of the newsletter. Like, we got all these other goofy events involving our black employees. Like, why isn't that splashed all across the newsletter? Like, bravo. Like, amazing. In the midst of the Rona and all this, black trailblazers right here in Florida. Whoopee. No, man. We're going to get this PTO for this white one. We'll get back to these niggers later. Like, dang. To be expected, as was said. To be expected. Just having that in mind, so I'm not going around looking for that white validation and thinking they're going to celebrate and bring in Krispy Kreme donuts just because, you know, we did something well. That is not what is happening here at all. Everyone satisfied? We got everybody? Grand. We will be here tomorrow. Normal time, regular time for the compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We will review what a week. Man, talk about historic infamy. They have banned my president from Twitter. I'm disgusted. And I think Facebook, social media across, has banned my president. Oh, it's an outrage. What a way to start 2021. We'll discuss that tomorrow as well. As I said, they released the new video footage of the explosion in Nashville. They had a white fella in Colorado who said he was ready to do another Nashville. I mean, white people. Wow. What a beginning to the year. White identity extremists, white terrorism, full throttle in 2021. With all of that, should go without saying, sobriety would be best. You will need your brain computer. They have got bombs going off hither and yonder, white terrorists. You can't even think that the U.S. Capitol building is safe. White people are smashing windows and breaking in there. Enforcement officers being pelted. We'll need our brain computer working at maximum capacity. Again, it should go without saying, excellent time to hunker down. If you have to go out for serious things, work-related issues, or, you know, something that is essential, be very alert. If it looks like a white person, really anybody, they are being loud, rowdy, distance, all about distance, no public confrontations, no verbal skirmishes. We are super risk avoidance. You should really be thinking if somebody is out and being loud and rowdy in this type of environment, like, oh yeah, they are looking for confrontation. They might be armed. They might have 5-25 people with them who are also armed. They might have explosives. You have no idea. Like, you didn't leave your house to confront this person or anybody else. You didn't leave your house for Mortal Kombat. That's not what we're engaged in. Time to go. Everything is about evasive. Let's get out of here. We will try this again when it is safe, but be very aware of your surroundings. What is happening? Who is around you? Be thinking, man, I could be around some people who are armed and excited to let off some rounds. In addition to being sober, hyper alert if you're in a vehicle, driver or passenger, you are buckled. If you're driving, you are not on the cell phone. Again, we need our attention to be aware of our surroundings. Two, we're trying to minimize contact with the Mark Furmans, Amber Geigers of the known universe. Just the small things that we can control, being buckled, being sober, being aware of what's happening around us. Just trying to minimize contact as best we can. Hunkering down, great option also. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times. In all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person, it has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. No name calling. That right there, in my view, really key component of us solving this problem. I don't think we're getting any closer to universal woman, universal man by calling other black people coons and all these other names that they have not chosen to call themselves. No, we're supposed to be about minimizing conflict with other victims of racism. I think just something that small in the 10 stops, no name calling, that right there, inching us a little bit closer to solving this problem. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm up. A victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.